Attention, please. Places for top of show. Places for top of show. Hello, and welcome to Twins Talk Theater. We are Cindy.
And Stacy.
And we're talking about theater, backstage life, and all the excitement that the audience doesn't get to see.
Enjoy the show.
These are funky.
Cool. Yeah, so we have headsets so that we don't feedback.
Yes.
These are microphones, and Kai's recording everything. Twins on Skype.
Oh, hello.
So you can hear her when she talks.
How are you?
Good, how are you?
I'm fine, thank you.
And, yeah, so...
All right.
Are we still working? Perfect. So I guess we're just... So Twin and I are doing a podcast.
Yes.
And we're talking about backstage theater things, production things, all of that.
Awesome.
I've worked with you... Well, mostly on stage, but now recently off stage at Palos Verdes.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, everyone, this is Chris Gilbert.
Hello,
he
everyone.
He is the director of sales and...
And development.
And development, but also the producer for our three main shows a year.
Yep.
He kind of happened into the role when the current producer left 4 days after Chris started. So... Mm-hmm. By trial and fire in the last couple shows.
It's been a magical journey. I should have a question mark. He's the director of sales and development, question mark?
So some of the things we wanted to talk to you about is your connection between acting and producing, because most of your background is in acting, and now you've become a producer. So tell us a little bit about your background and how you got to this point in life.
Yeah, so, well, I started when I was four. No. well, my parents met in the theater, so I'll start there just very briefly because that's sort of where I was interested in. And they were in various capacities. So I did, from an early age, oddly enough, experience different sides of it. My mom was a singer and an actress, but also costumed things for at different times, usually not shows she was in, but she would do that for the local community theater in Ann Arbor. And my dad, when they met, they actually met in a theater, and my dad was doing house management and sort of arts administration related things. So
he was dating an actor.
He was dating an actor. Nobody wins that deal. Ask my wife. But it's... So I guess coming by it honestly, I guess would be one way to say it, but also there was never really a push in that direction, but it was just something that probably I have a little more understanding of than maybe I ordinarily might if I just was like, I was an actor and now I'm trying to do paperwork related to theater. It's like it's not an automatic transition, but anything around the shows, as you know, anything if you're around shows, both of you are involved with the process, so you learn not only the lingo, but also kind of the flow of things by being in it on one end, which means you would not be completely inept in another part of it just by the function of having gone through the process quite a few times. It doesn't mean someone who is a director can jump in and be a technical director, or who is a stage manager can automatically sing. That's not it. But it's still in the arena, obviously.
Yeah, like you said, still know the language,
yeah,
still
it's sort
know
of,
the people.
It's sort of a more natural outgrowth. But I mean, I guess growing up in and around it, I was always sort of more inclined to be the performer rather than something else. But I did help, you know, paint the sets with my dad when he was doing a show, or he would do more production end or odds and ends of set things, backstage stuff mostly. And so I would do some of that. So I was always around it. So I guess that comfort maybe makes it a little easier to do this part. I would say that probably the tricky part of the transition is the things that you don't have exposure to are always going to be the ones that are more mysterious. So writing contracts, you know, dealing with how hiring works, scheduling, all of those things is very much different than when you're the actor. I told somebody the other day, you know, as the actor, you know when the auditions are. And so you go, oh, this is on a Wednesday and my audition is at 2:30. And these are the materials I need. So I prepare those and then I do it. And then if you're lucky, you get a call back and they tell you when that is. And then they give you what materials they want for that, for the most part.
You have to worry about what's traffic and what am I wearing?
Right. I can learn that material. Okay. This is what they've told me. And then you do that. And then if you get hired, they go, great. Here's when you start. And so it's easy to see what Hitchcock, you know, called actors cattle. He did it for different reasons, but
we call them moving meat. But,
yeah, it's a little bit, right. It's a little point and shoot, like just point the actor in that direction and hope they do what they do and then have it stop when it needs to. But now on this side, it's like, oh, for every person that has that directive, there's somebody who has to provide that for them. And that it turns out to be me in most cases, like, oh crap, I have to do this. You know, like, oh, I'm the one who has to make the copies of all the scripts that the actors have in hand the first day. It's not, they don't just magically appear. So, and I have really no elves. So, it's a lot of it is me, which is good learning experience, but it definitely changes the nature of how you view, the time frames for everything, which I'm sure both of you have experienced, as you're more of stage management.
Oh yeah, Cindy deals with
Cindy, right?
The actors more often than I have to deal with.
Yeah, but also in terms of the scheduling, Cindy, I imagine you're doing it. You know, you're doing it very specifically from a stage management perspective, which will be a different.
I love what you're saying because I was trained as a stage manager and I've done that for years. And then two years ago, I kind of transitioned into like production management, which is a bit of a step above.
Yeah.
And I just remember on my first show. You know, leading up to my first show, and I kind of sat around for a little bit and was asking all these questions. And then finally, I just realized, I was like, wait, I think I'm the one that's supposed to be coming up with all these answers. You know, I was so used as a stage manager of like, I had to do a daily call for the singers, but I never had to like create a tech schedule and come up with a budget for the tech schedule and all that stuff. So I was just kind of sitting around. And then I just remember the day that I was walking through the rehearsal room one day, and I was like, oh, wait, that's my job. Everyone's waiting for me to create all that paperwork.
Yes, so, exactly. You know, well, and Stacey does the same thing, I think, with her end of it now, too, as our production manager. You really – it. And again, there's a natural – I guess there's some elements of it that are natural progression. But the truth is because there's not usually a manual – when you're suddenly in that role, you go, great, I'm in charge of this whole thing. Okay, I can generally understand that. But then you go, oh, wait, what things are involved there? Which area? Oh, because I wake up every day, the closer we get to starting rehearsal, going, I don't think I should be this calm. Like, I'm sure there is something I'm leaving out that is of fundamental importance that I've just not even, like, even, and to be fair, it gets better, I'm sure, over time because you develop your own rhythm, but I just think I've done, you know, two shows. So this is the third one. So you go, oh, well, now I should have a system. It's like, eh, I sort of do, but then it's still like, oh, wait, okay, I know I do contracts with the union. What's my step again? What's my process? It's going to take four or five times of that because there's so many duties that the rhythm of every single piece of that isn't yet set. At least for me, it's not setting in as well as it could be. It could just be my brain doesn't work very well, but...
And you haven't had much experience with it.
Right.
Yeah, it took me at least a season. Once I got like a season of being a production manager at a company full-time for one season under my belt, the second season, I was like, oh, I kind of have templates and I have schedules and I kind of know what I'm doing now, you know? So I wouldn't say it was easy, but it was a little bit more controlled the second year.
Yeah.
So
that's my hope is that, although I still feel like I'm... You know, it may be by the end of the first full season where I've been in the process before I get to that comfort, you know, because I sort of helped with the planning as of the next season right when I got here, as well as the immediacy of producing the shows, as well as though Stacey has a really good system for the postmortem on things, it's hard to
have the time.
It's hard
to
for us to sit down and really do it the way we should, which would be awesome. Be able to then we could actually say, oh, what were the real hitches in the giddy up here? What can we fix for next time? And we haven't, we know those intrinsically, sort of. We kind of know it when we are able to talk to each other next about the next thing, but it doesn't have the same effect as being able to really take a little bit of reflection at the end of one and go, okay, so anything related to the immediate one coming up, let's fix it for now. And then we'll know going forward that's kind of covered. It's more like when we get to that moment in the next one, maybe we'll make sure we don't do the same mistake. But it doesn't necessarily feel like it's totally plotted out to succeed against that yet.
But I think that's a big thing. Most people, when the show's done, they're done. Like actors are like, close the curtain, we're done, they leave.
Right.
And the rest of us are like, okay, now we need to strike the set and we need to get the bills paid and we need to sit down and figure out, will we hire these directors again? Did we like those actors?
Yeah.
Did we make budget? Did we come up with an issue that we need to solve for next time? So even though the curtain closes and the audience claps, that's really not the end.
Right. And production manager, I imagine the same thing, right, Cindy? I mean, you're absolutely, that's your part of your purview is to be able to sort of make the analysis of how did this go so that you can figure out how to make it go even better the next time.
Well, it's even like in, well, at least my experience in opera, depending on where we were, what location we were producing at, mm-hmm. sometimes we struck the whole set that night. Sometimes we had 3 days later that we struck the set, and then it's returning all the props and returning the costumes and
right.
finalizing the budget and getting all the receipts turned in and, you know, getting the time sheets from the local union and paying that bill. And so it would sometimes be a month or two.
Yeah.
After the show closed to finally like close it out. Usually it wasn't even until the very, very end of the season when I was like, our books need to close in 3 weeks because it's the end of the fiscal year. I need all these receipts right. turned in, you know? So it's a little bit more challenging, I guess, as a production manager than a stage manager. Cause you can't just kind of like turn in your book and you're done. There's right. so much stuff that happens after the closing of a show to really close it out. And what I've experienced.
Yeah. And I would say that it probably is ultimately that distinction is as much the difference between a staff member and a hired in person to some degree. I mean, some of it's being in management, some sort of management element, but like, because we're employed, in our case, at least we're employed by the theater and all the year round. So the show's closed and then the next one's going to open and we got to plan that's my job. I'm here and I get paid more than I would if I was just working, you know, gig to gig, because there's a little bit of stability to that. But I also right. means that the responsibility is I'm there 5 days a week as opposed to for 5 weeks and then I might not be back that season again. You know, it's like, oh no, the next thing comes up is also my responsibility and the next thing is also. So that's what makes it the business aspect as opposed to just we're putting on a show, quote unquote. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Right. Or, you know, trying to open up one show while you're planning 3 seasons ahead.
Well, right.
Attempting to do that.
Or even thinking about it.
Chris and I are just trying to do 2 shows ahead.
We're just trying to, I'm just trying to get to it. Like, let's think about 42nd Street now, even though I know tomorrow is technically one day closer to the rehearsal for Spelling Bee. I got to get.
Yeah, we haven't even thought of Picasso much. That's in between the two.
Not enough. And we're going to have to crunch that out a little bit. The set and costumes, particularly. I mean, it will come together, but it's just. It is amazing how lax you can get when you're like, well, all I know is I got to get these risers built for this thing first before I can even think about a, you know, 1904 bar in Paris.
Yeah.
And yet you have to think about it now too. Like it's not an option really to not think about it.
Because if we don't think about it, like Cindy said, nobody else is thinking about it. So nobody else is making that decision.
That's exactly right. Yeah. Cindy, that was a good point, Cindy. It's like, oh wait, that's me that has to decide that thing.
Yeah, it was just amazing when I realized that, you know, because I was so used to as a stage manager that would just like show up at a company for pre-production, you know, and get like
right.
the schedule handed to you and the tech schedule handed to you, you know, and yeah. I was just like, oh my God, I have no one to like turn to. This is my job.
Yeah.
So
if anyone's going to get those pieces of paper, someone has to generate them and you're either in charge of making someone do it or more often it's just you that has to do it.
Yeah. More often than not. That was me. Yeah.
That's it. It's really what it comes down to, which is why you, of course, I think collaboration is, there is circling back to the transition aspect too, in theory, because of being in the same milieu that it's theater, it's performing, understanding in and believing in, I mean, not everybody does this, but believing in as an actor, I always sort of believed in my part as truly a part of the process. And having had my parents both involved in different aspects of the theater, I think did make a difference in terms of how I behaved as an actor, I hope, in general.
Yeah, you were always great because you were nice to the crew, which goes a long ways when you're crew.
Well, it also, the amazing thing to me that was so sad is that I know that that's true. And it's so disappointing because to me, it's like, I'm well aware that the show doesn't work. If we want to just do the show and don't care what it looks like, sounds like, feels like, then I can go out there and give a pretty entertaining performance and people will go, but they're not paying the same dollar if I just am doing it in kind of like a half lit room as if I have costumes, sound, orchestra. So it's like all of the things that go into that are the only reason my performance, all the skills that I bring to bear are useful if you see them as part of a whole. And so I think to some degree, having had that attitude before, maybe made it a little easier in understanding, at least as a producer, how I want to approach including people in the process on that end.
And I think it's been really useful because you had the actor knowledge coming in to be the producer. I mean, I've been here at the Norris for almost 9 years mm-hmm. when Chris joined, but he had been acting for years here before he joined, so I knew him. But when he came in, some of the things we talked about are how do we want to present ourselves to the crew and to the actors, and how do we want them to take away information from here? You know, they can't just be, as we made fun of earlier, moving meat. Like right. they are appreciated, and without them, we also don't have a show.
Yes.
So Chris and I have started giving them little gifts at opening night yeah. and trying to do little parties or trying to write them thank you letters or just little things like that to let them know we do appreciate all your hard work. And not just the actors, but also the crew and the production team Absolutely. And the orchestra and everybody treated like family and like home, because without one of those groups, we're not getting the show done. It'd be a really sad musical with no musicians.
And the likelihood is, which kind of goes back to our, at least for me now, so the transition to being a staff member, is that the awareness is that, again, we need them to do well, for it all to go well, but also I'm aware that I can't really, in my particular space, I can't necessarily pay anybody what they're worth. Really. And right. that's true across the arts as across time. So it's not really a new thing, but the idea of saying, gosh, if I get some amazing people, because we have, if Stacey and I have a welcoming sort of setup, then people will want to work there because everybody sort of knows you're rarely going to get what you think you're worth. Right. But if somebody says you personally are worth more than what we know you're worth more, and we're going to make it outside of the money that we can't necessarily pay you, we can at least make this a welcome experience. So for that time, it really is benefiting you in some of the ways that we all know when we were doing it for free anyway, we do. You know what I mean? It's that thing. If you grow up in community theater, whether it was well or poorly executed, the most important thing was how much fun it was to do.
And if it got you addicted to it.
If it was, assuming it was, and I certainly grew up and was lucky in the community theater in Ann Arbor was really quite excellent on average. There were great people, great, crazy, fun people who cared about each other. And that's what I took away from that experience of watching cast, crew, et cetera. And it's easier sometimes to find that when no one's getting paid because they have no choice, but they must be doing it because they like it, you know?
Yeah.
Because they're getting nothing from it monetarily.
Yeah.
So once they are, even if it's not enough, you still want to preserve that attitude of like, I would do this for free. I'm glad I'm getting a little money. It's never going to be enough. But at least if I have that soulful connection about it, then it makes it fun and makes it worthwhile.
It's also one of the things I learned from Cindy doing shows. Because she was a stage manager and I was a TD and I never really, you know, worried about what the actors did. I was in charge of the crew.
Right.
The first day Cindy came into tech, she would bring a bag of candy.
Right.
And she makes a lot of friends bringing a bag of candy and showing up early to tech.
Yep.
And when we were at the Terrace Theater in Long Beach, they knew her as the lady who brought candy. But they were willing to
do anything. Any one of those guys would have done absolutely anything I asked of them.
Yeah.
For a simple bag of like $5 candy.
Yeah.
Yep. Well, but at the same time, I also show them respect, you know, and it's right. the same that you do with performers and anybody else. You know, yeah, I brought them candy, and as director of production at Tri-Cities Opera and as a stage manager before that, I started bringing bagels to load in and stuff like that. But it's really just showing them that you respect them as people and as part of the team. You know, if you include them as part of the team and you let them know that they're just as important as everybody else and that you see what they're doing and you respect what they're doing and you treat them like part of the family, which, you know, you just said what you loved about the community theater is that you do feel like you're part of a family and you feel like you're there because you love to be there. And that's the way that I always go into places and I always treat everybody. You know, if you're the custodian who's helping us take out the trash at the end of the night, or you're my head carpenter who's making sure that these scene changes are safe and secure, or you're the super that literally walks on stage for 2 minutes, you know, every single person needs to be there and needs to be part of the production in order to make that production whole.
Yep.
And so bringing the candy and the bagels just kind of like reinforces that a little bit, you know, and makes them perk up. But it just makes them feel important. And so I also love what you said about well, I don't love, because I do wish all of us got paid more money than we actually get paid.
Right.
Right. But working as a director of production for a couple seasons and actually having to like come up with a budget, which I believe you do as well. You know, you need to come up with a budget. Right. You need to make sure it works with how much money we think we're bringing in as a company, donations we're getting, you know, so it all balances out and you can never really pay people what you want to pay people.
Right.
And so I worked really hard to be like, well, if I cannot pay them what I want to pay them, what other things can I give them that don't necessarily show up in the budget or I can get donated that will show them I appreciate them. And so sometimes it was like, well, I'll let them, you know, we could share a car or I'll provide housing for them or I'll make sure that they have internet in their home or something just to show them that they are appreciated and, you know, that they are, we do appreciate what they do and we understand that we're not paying them as much as we wish they could pay, we could pay them.
Right.
Yeah, and but it's not like we're making a ton of money either. You know, we're all in the same boat and we're trying to help each other here.
Right. It's what you can do to take care of them. Or, you know, even today, I'm at Opera Philadelphia right now working on one of their festivals. And as a production supervisor, we loaded into our rehearsal hall today. And I have there's a whole stage management team. And as production supervisor, I don't really have to do stuff that stage managers do. So we moved into the space and they were all trying to figure out how to tape out the floor and the best way to set it up in the rehearsal hall. And I was just kind of standing there for a few minutes and I realized, you know, not really part of my job. So instead I went in and got coffee for everybody. And the production manager was like, you don't have to get coffee. And I was like, yo, I'm just standing here. They're all working. I got nothing else to do. And so the least I can do is spend $10 and buy them all coffee because I know they need it.
Yep.
You know?
Yep.
It's just little things that you do to make people feel appreciated. And I think that's part of why I love theater so much. And I think Stacey and I both love theater so much is that you just become part of a family no matter where you go. And everyone just takes care of each other.
I mean, theoretically, these are principles that you can apply anywhere, right? It doesn't have to be just in this job.
True. Yes.
But the truth is whenever there's a sense of, I think that there's a different sense of shared purpose and corporate situations try to create this to varying degrees of success. And they can only do, there's only so much familial quality you can, inculcate into your company depending on what the company is and so forth. But because of what we do, because of the nature, it seems to me, of art and performance, which is a shared experience anyway. I mean, the end product of what we're doing is intended to be shared with people in a very personal way. So yes, we were selling you a seat to come, please come pay me money to come have this experience. But the idea is I'm actually putting myself more than, I mean, a craftsperson of any type, theoretically, if you shape an Aston Martin and you're the shaper of the fenders and you hand do that, theoretically, you have the same thing I do. But if we assume that art has a slightly different energy than some other kinds of businesses, insurance, and I don't knock it. I'm just saying it's a different animal.
We don't understand.
The end product of that is still a human connection, but the way that we view the finished product, when that opening night and the curtain goes up and I see people enjoying it, that's what matters to me. So I know I'm creating something that is very personal. And so I think the more personally you can invest in the familial aspects of how you create it, that energy transmits to the product that you then share with those people who had nothing to do with creating it, but are just coming to experience it. And I think that's important because I think the best of what any level of production can be derives from how well that gets executed over time.
Because it can be seen on stage. You can tell if a group of people are not connected and they're just not having fun together, and it just still feels a little awkward even in the audience. So if from us, from the top down, can create a community, then the audience feels it, and they know too that it was a fun show and people were having fun going there, and then they are more excited to be there to be a part of it because this must be a fun and exciting thing, which also, you know, just spreads to spreading the word and people wanting to come back and actors having fun and them wanting to come back. And it's such a simple thing for us to do, to be nice and friendly to people and encourage them to come back, which can expand the entire theater community all across the country.
I believe it's huge. I mean, I think, and I have no reason to change my MO. I think, and Cindy particularly, is, you know, when you get into budgets and you start having to look at numbers, and you know it too, but I'm that's a part that I'm wholly unfamiliar with. So it's definitely a difficult learning curve for me just to do the mechanics of it and do it well, you know, do the math essentially is to make sure it's going well. But what I'm acutely aware of is that I still think the there's a bottom line aspect that has to be maintained. So because otherwise you don't get to play in the sandbox. You know, if you can't afford to rent the sandbox anymore, they will take it away from you. You know, but if you
it's
can,
a great
if,
visual.
You out. You kids out of there. But I think that it seems really important to me to regardless of how well or poorly it's going in those other aspects, as long as I have that sandbox to play in, what I do want to do is make sure when it gets to that time that as much as possible, we're enjoying that experience because it does matter. And even if you can't measure it, I think it does matter in what you put out and what you're sharing with the world. So some of it has to start with an ethic that that's what you're doing. Because I think very few people get into it with a mercenary aspect of how much money can I make from doing this theatrical production.
No, they go to Hollywood.
Yeah, right.
Or to business.
And there are producers, you know, the old school producers, you know, Merrick and or you go to film, Selznick, these people, there's some hard line, hard edge, you know, they're celebrated for being jerks and this kind of thing. And you go, because they got stuff done and they made great things and they made great art. And you go, okay, but also, you know, I think there's a way to say, what if we're caring about all people, not just we're taking care of the artists, but we're taking care of all of the artisans who are involved, all of the creative people. And that's somebody's pulling line 13. If they pull it wrong, the show doesn't go quite as well as it goes. And so to me, they're part of the art. You know?
Yeah, they have to build the sets and sew the costumes. That's just as much of a
talent. Volunteers who welcome the audience and make it an easy experience of transitioning from their traffic craziness to how bad or easy it was to park to welcome, have fun, here, have a drink. We're glad to see you. Here's your seat. That stuff all is part of what you do. And from the moment they hit our property in whatever way that is, that's part of the experience. So if we forget that at our peril, I think.
Yeah, get very focused on doing a show and forget what happens outside of the backstage or on stage area.
Yeah, I think if you do that, you're going to, there's a chance of it becomes a way to slip in all areas, you know? So it's finding all those small details, but it is exhausting at times.
Yeah, it's trying to keep it all in your head. Like, oh, I'm trying to build a set and organize a set today. Oh, I forgot to call the bartender to make sure he's going to be there on opening night so that he can serve drinks in the after party.
Right.
which Judy just reminded me of yesterday. And I was like, oh, yeah, I got to do that. I was busy trying to design a set. Okay, let's worry about that too.
Right. Build a banner, get a sponsor. What?
Yeah. How does that relate? Oh, because that's what we do.
I guess they're connected, but yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of hat wearing, as you know.
So that's about 30 minutes.
Yay.
I think that's good. One last question we had that I was talking to Melissa in the other room. And
I've heard of her.
Saying that, yeah, you share an office. we're calling the podcast Twins Talk Theater. And so Melissa's like, well, if it's twins, you should ask any experience that the interviewee has with twins or with Twin and I or anything.
Interesting.
So do you have any good twin stories or meeting Cindy and I for the first time and getting us confused or working with twins?
That's an interesting.
Well, we kind of do that on purpose sometimes, though, when we go to the Norris.
Right.
We do switch name tags.
That isn't very helpful. Yeah, nobody likes either one of you for that.
Yeah. Well, Greg does. But... I finds it very entertaining.
Well, I mean, my own, I guess... I'm trying to think theatrically related, not necessarily. I mean,
it doesn't have to be theatrically.
So I mean, I dated a twin when I was in college. So, and they were identical. Most people could tell them apart, but you say that when you know them well. And then the truth is somebody else who's friends with another set of twins goes, oh yeah, no, we could totally tell them apart. And they're like, huh? I had no idea. But obviously familiarity breeds both contempt and recognizability. So at least, you know, the more you see twins together, the more you were able to distinguish, even if they're really, really close and look. So, we never really ran into that issue. I was certainly friends with that. I would say that the fascinating thing ended up with, the woman that I didn't, that wasn't dating. This is unrelated to me not dating her, by the way. But there were some of the personal struggles and to sort of, just some mental health issues that, were sort of keenly felt by the other one, but not to the same degree, you know. And so as those things started to happen, there was definitely a sense of the well-being of the whole unit was compromised.
See, Chris understands we're a whole unit.
Yeah, it really is a remarkable, it is a remarkable thing. And it's something that, I mean, I think it's cool on that end that you two are doing this because it's a net, I mean, it's the most natural kind of concept that, because you happen to be in the same business too. I mean, in general, you know, if one of you was in banking and one was in theater, it would still be an interesting, but it would be Twins Talk Theater, but you would have to talk at it from very different angles, which would be cool, but just a very different.
That would have been.
That's what I'm excited about. I was just talking to the stage managers on this team that I'm working with, and I mentioned this project to them, and off the top of their head, they listed three other sets of twins that they know in opera, some that are stage managers, some that are singers, some that are a mix between the two.
Oh, you've got to get that.
Like, you got to talk to these twins if you're twins and you're talking about theater. So
you just blew Chris's mind. The look on his face was ridiculous.
Well, that's really cool because you can, marketing wise, but in terms of interest wise, you get people who are twins or who maybe are dating or married to a twin and we're like, I'd like some insights on, you know, because as you get those people talking, it is a different animal, sometimes different energy of what that's like, not just the shorthanding of language cues, cause that's different if you're having this kind of formalized setting maybe, but I think, you should have a wide audience of people who are interested in the fact that there are quite a few sets of twins involved in theatrical ventures, you know, in the same kind of business.
You hear about it all the time. Twins, marry twins or twins, end up, they
giving birth both on the same day.
Yeah, birth on the same day, or they're separated at birth, and when they get back together, they've created the same words, and they both wear glasses, and they both have the same favorite TV show. So I think it's natural, especially for identical twins and fraternal twins, to kind of go the same way. Though, as Twin and I talked about on the first podcast, we both went different directions, but have come back towards the same.
Which is another cool angle.
Yeah. She went stage management. I went TD, but now we're both going production management. She went to grad school. I didn't go to grad school, but we're still kind of in the same area and boat.
Right.
But from two different angles, but still ending up at the same.
And that's actually, I think, a valuable thing in the non-performing side, as well as performing too, but certainly in the non-performing side, to talk about going forward, if you're getting exposure to other sets of twins, or even just people working in it that maybe have a commonality, if you take two people, whether they're twins or not, that are husband and wife, or you have something to talk about their different experiences, even in the same basic field, and how their perception of whether that make a difference, you know, like, because you probably have a perspective on Cindy having gone and gotten a graduate degree in this thing, not necessarily good or bad, but I just mean you have an interesting view of it because it isn't the exact shared experience, and yet you're both slugging it out in similar trenches. And so how does each one feel about, well, I guess I wish I'd done that, or no, I wish I wouldn't have bothered, or whatever. It's fascinating.
The shared experience. I mean, I didn't go to grad school,
right?
But I learned what she learned in grad school because she was there. And some of the templates I use now are because she found them and created them in grad school.
Well, that's actually, you got like a natural. Yeah. So you actually owe her some money for her graduate degree is what you're saying.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I need to start paying on that grad school loan.
Yeah. Pay that off. What a neat program that would be.
Well, I don't recommend it. So she's going to have to pay half of this. All
right. Exactly. Yeah. If you could, Cindy, if you can convince.
And build me and then. Build this other person in California that you've never heard of.
I think that would be fantastic.
Well, somehow I think you wrote down my phone number at CCM because they keep calling me asking for you to talk about Cincinnati Conservatory.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Well, you're probably my emergency contact.
Yeah, but why? Yeah, maybe. So I'm like, yeah, I'm Cindy.
It's an emergency. Sure. We need Cindy back here to do a show.
Actually,
call her, please.
We need her to give us money.
Well, there's usually, I get calls every week from my grad school.
Yep. You went to grad school. You must have a good job. Now give us money.
Yeah.
I went to grad school for theater.
It's theater. You guys know what it is. You gave me the degree. Yeah. That's a fascinating. I'm fascinated to hear more about that when you get the other twins involved and talk about. Because I think that's a different aspect of the human part of the experience, not just the person in career, but also how that affects how your personality is involved in that.
Yeah, and the knowing the other person's
yeah
how it works. Well, excellent. Great.
Thank you, Chris, very much.
You are the first person we've interviewed, so thank you.
I'm grateful to have been on a semi-soapbox for this time. And
excellent.
Sydney, thank you so much.
We recorded you so other people can hear your soapbox speeches.
We'll all be rich, I tell you.
Perfect. Well, great. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thanks, Cindy.
Thanks, Chris.
Talk to you later.